NPR.
When Isabel Kayembe was in her early 20s, she left home. Home was in Angola, a country at the time racked by violence from years of civil war. And so she and her family fled south to Namibia.
They made it to a refugee camp where they lived for the next 17 years, surviving off rations and waiting for the chance to be resettled somewhere else in the world, somewhere where they could start a new life.
You don't know what tomorrow will bring. You don't know when you are going to leave the camp. And if you have the chance, then it's like winning a lottery.
And after years of waiting, their number finally came up. Their application for resettlement was accepted, and they found out they'd be resettled in a place called Rhode Island. All they knew about the U.S. was what they'd seen in the movies. And Isabel said she imagined this just incredible place.
You arrive, you find a mansion waiting for you, cars to be driven, a pool, and then you have chauffeurs. That's what we all think.
But when Isabel and her family finally landed at a U.S. airport in the middle of January, the reality was less glamorous. It was shockingly cold outside. The streets were not figuratively paved with gold, but instead it was covered in this powdery white stuff.
Yeah, and the fancy car, the mansion with the pool, forget about it.
What I learned myself is that everything you do, you have to work for it.
And not only that, refugees like Isabel face a ticking clock when it comes to finding that work. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Adrian Ma.
And I'm Darian Woods. Today on the show, we'll speak with an expert who believes the federal policies on refugee resettlement have actually resulted in a lot of people being resettled into poverty.
This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Humana. Your employees are more than your coworkers. They're the heartbeat of your business. That's why Humana offers modern group benefits designed to protect employees and their families with dental, vision, life, and disability coverage. Humana knows every employee and every business is unique. That's why they listen to your needs and build plans with you and your team in mind. That's the power of human care.
From the day Isabel arrived with her family in Rhode Island, she was on the clock. Under federal policy, refugees are expected to become what they call economically self-sufficient within 90 days. For Isabel, that meant getting a job, paying the bills and rent, not getting cash assistance from the government, and even starting to pay back the plane tickets she and her family used to get here. Now, there are some caveats. Certain families or individuals may qualify for other government benefits, like temporary assistance for needy families or disability insurance. But for everyone else, the default 90-day policy is about getting people working. So finding work was at the top of Isabel's list.
I wanted to work because I didn't want to be a burden. I wanted to do something instead of just depending on the government, because I depended on others for a very long time.
Isabel and her husband took the first job they were offered at a meatpacking facility about 45 minutes away. And the job was basically stand next to the conveyor belt, pick up the meat, and put it on the tray.
It's like working in the deep freezer. We started the work at 7 o'clock that day, and we finished the job at 7 p.m.
Isabel and her husband's story is replicated thousands of times a year all around the country. So far this year, more than 50,000 refugees have been resettled. So why would the government want Isabel to hurry up and get a job as soon as possible? Well, because it costs money. For each refugee the government resettles, it allocates about $2,400, which is supposed to last those 90 days.
That averages out to about $26 a day for 3 months. And it's money that's supposed to help refugees with essentials like clothing and shelter, to help pay for social workers that can connect them with food and medical assistance. But it's all temporary because, again, the government wants refugees who can work, working, paying taxes, becoming, quote, self-sufficient.
And look, Isabel did find a job. But researcher Blair Sackett says this focus on refugees becoming self-sufficient in 90 days, it kind of undermines everyone's goals from the get-go.
For those who continue to face barriers to well-paid jobs, we're essentially resettling people into poverty.
Blair studies refugee resettlement. She and her colleague Annette Leroux recently published a book called We Thought It Would Be Heaven, Refugees in an Unequal America. And in this book, they chronicled the experiences of dozens of refugee families across the country. And Blair says what they found was these people are under extreme pressure from the moment they arrive, trying to navigate a completely new language and culture. A lot of them had never used the internet to find a job and didn't have things like a driver's license or a bank account.
Particularly for those who didn't speak English, but even among those who had some basic English level, this often meant they were pushed into grueling low-wage work in really difficult working conditions.
Now, those government funds for the first 90 days, they pay for things like social workers and English language training. But Blair says when refugees are working these type of long hours, they don't often have time to take advantage of these resources.
Over time, this hinders the ability of families to gain these critical skills for navigating day-to-day life, but also for realizing their economic prospects.
On top of this ticking clock, another barrier refugees face to finding their economic footing has to do with location. So the government actually decides where refugees are initially placed. They don't choose. And Blair says this can create problems. In her book, she tells the story of a refugee family placed in a nice Pennsylvania neighborhood close to some good schools for the kids, but the parents could not actually find jobs that they were eligible to do in that area, and so they had to look elsewhere to find jobs that might have been like in a factory or a shipping warehouse. It's a trend that Blair says happens with many refugee families.
Many of them moved to Akron, Ohio, Dayton, Ohio, and Lexington, Kentucky. And this was in part because this sort of manufacturing, those jobs were more available there. And so in many ways for the family, they had to choose between short-term survival and the family's long-term economic prospects.
Blair says she understands the economic impulse to try to make refugees as self-sufficient as possible in as short a time as possible. But she argues that 90 days is just not long enough, and it forces people into making poor, short-term economic decisions. So what are some potential solutions? Blair says for refugees to have a better chance at long-term economic success, they need two things: more time and more community.
On the more time piece of this, Blair says the U.S. could extend the period of guaranteed support for new refugees. In Canada, for instance, that period is at least 12 months.
So in that time, families are supported as they take English classes, focus on mastering the language, take job skills training classes, which help translate skills from back home into their new country context.
Blair says all this can make a big difference. For instance, she says there are studies showing how a better command of English leads to better paying and more stable jobs for refugees. Another policy change that Blair argues for is reconsidering how refugees are placed, allowing more of them to move to areas where there are other refugees and can benefit from the social and cultural networks that can form.
Isabel Kayembe, the woman from Angola, says that would have been really helpful for her.
It could be easier for us because we share the same values, same experience, the same journey.
Nowadays, she's still living in Rhode Island. She and her husband recently bought a house. She works for a refugee resettlement agency. And while she's made it, in a sense, she says she also sees too many people who are stuck in survival mode.
Imagine if you work 12 hours a day or even 15 hours a day. At the end of the day, you are like living in another world because you don't know what's happening in the real life. Years pass by. Nothing is done because there are a lot of things to pay. That's what is happening.
For people in a new country, a new culture, in a totally new way of life, Isabel says 90 days is just not enough.
This episode was produced by Brittany Cronin with engineering by Josh Newell. It was fact-checked by Cooper Katz-McKim. Our editor is Kate Kincannon, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Viore, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to viore.com/NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.